You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. Our guest for this very special edition of Secure Freedom Radio is Diana West, an author, a columnist, a blogger par excellence. You can follow her writings, and we will be discussing some of them that are particularly salient in just a moment, but you can find them at dianawest.net. Her two books are Death of the Grown-Up and American Betrayal. And we're doing a bit of a deep dive on American Betrayal at the moment. And I just wanted to pick up where we left off, Diana. I wanted to ask, was there in your research any evidence that the decision by FDR to normalize relations, to break with his predecessors and embrace normal relations with the Soviet Union, was itself influenced by some of these operatives who, under whose sway he certainly came subsequently?
I think that's a very fair assumption. Beginning from the moment the Bolsheviks took power, you saw all manner of efforts to sway world opinion in order to support them, in order to give them credits. We saw the beginning of the cycles we would see over and over again, where they would pretend to renounce communism in exchange for Western credits. In the 1920s, of course, there was the very famous influence operation known as the Trust, whereby counter-revolutionaries, white Russians and so on, and their allies where they had fled as refugees in other countries, were infiltrated to influence the same kinds of, subvert and influence these groups in order to destroy them and in order to curry favor with other governments. So, yes, I think that that's a very fair assumption. On top of that, we see right from the very start the same kind of efforts to create, of course, this would be the years of the Popular Front, whereby the communists were supposed to be working with the liberals and the socialists and everybody else to affect policy in the world and the Soviet relationship with it. So, yes, this is all a continuum.
It does indeed seem that way. We were talking a little bit about the cover-up that seems to have been imposed and enforced extremely rigorously by first the Roosevelt administration when they entered into this Faustian deal and almost certainly must have known that it was being violated right out of the box by the then Soviet Union, in part because of the priority, the primacy, if you will, that was associated with influence operations by these agents who had insinuated themselves into the FDR administration. Talk a little bit about the evidence we have that this isn't just a random event, that, or let alone that it didn't happen at all, that in fact this was part and parcel of Soviet tradecraft.
Yes, well, we have a very interesting event take place in the world, and has it related to America, which was the Nazi-Soviet Pact of 1939. And in the aftermath of that pact, our Congress passed a law whereby adherents of either Nazism and fascism or communism were not to be allowed to partake of the federal government. In other words, they were not allowed to be on the federal rolls as employees of the government. This law gave great leeway to the civil service to essentially make up its own mind as to whether somebody was belonging to either Nazi Bund or Communist Party groups. So this becomes a very interesting window between that point of the Nazi-Soviet Pact and our own alliance after Nazi Germany attacked Soviet Russia, our own alliance with the Soviet Union that we had throughout World War II. So in that window, we see the U.S. government carrying out or beginning to carry out this law, which required the government to figure out who was in these groups. And Martin Dies at the time was the chairman of the House Un-American Activities Committee, and he took this charge very seriously.
He was a Democrat.
He was a Democrat from Texas, absolutely. He had been a good friend of Roosevelt until he decided to go after not only Nazis and fascists, but also communists. In his investigations of trying to figure out subversion in American life. But he was able to compile, due to this law and the Justice Department activities and FBI activities as a result of, a list of some, I think it's over 1,100 federal employees who also were involved in a variety of communist fronts.
This makes Joseph McCarthy, about whom we'll speak momentarily, I imagine, seem a piker by comparison. He had a list of 50, as I recall. Is that right?
About 57, which would expand as he found out more. But yes, this list included the likes of Alger Hiss, the likes of Harry Dexter White, and other notables who we would later discover had committed all manner of treason and influence operations loyal to Stalin, advancing Soviet foreign policy goals. Now, what happened was we did end up in this alliance with Soviet Union, and the Roosevelt administration was never particularly happy with what Martin Dies was doing. And Roosevelt himself did not want anything really done with this list, the Dies list. I actually have a copy of it myself, which came to me from Stanton Evans. But it's an amazing artifact that shows the extent to which the government had already been penetrated. We can look back and see the absolute inaction taken ultimately by the government. This would be buried. This would be lost to us. This would be, no one wanted to bring it up, especially after someone like Alger Hiss proved to have done so many terrible things in service to the KGB and Stalin. This is sort of an artifact of that particular period, and it's very important to remember it. It's a great lesson, and it's also a great tragedy. We can look at it and see what we might have done had those Soviet agents been fired from the federal government.
Rooted out, as Martin Dies wanted them to. But just staying with Alger Hiss for a moment, Dinah West, as you know, there has been, I believe, even to the present moment, though it's completely discredited, an effort on the part of the left to exonerate Alger Hiss. He was a blue blood, an aristocrat, a very highly regarded diplomat, man of the Washington establishment. And these charges, by Whitaker Chambers, that laid bare what he was up to and has subsequently been shown unmistakably to have been involved in terms of, as you say, treason on behalf of the KGB and Stalin, there's been this desperate effort to exonerate him. Tell us why that is simply untenable and the implications of what he did.
Yes, well, it's an important thing to understand that on the left, there is the open effort to exonerate him. But on the right, meaning those who follow these matters, who teach these matters, the academics, the experts in Cold War history, it is an effort to simply tag him as a spy who stole secrets. Now, what we now can do, what we now can understand about Alger Hiss, with complete certainty, is that he was an agent of influence who was able to sway policy, for example, at Yalta, where he was extremely important in the goings-on that would essentially cede much of Europe to the Soviet Union, that would leave China in communist hands a few years later, the setting up of the United Nations, where he was the acting Secretary General of the original assembly. He exerted tremendous influence over shaping the world as we know it today.
And in a very negative way.
In a very negative way. But the debate, if you notice, has shifted to a point of great narrowness, whereas we have the ridiculous effort to exonerate him. But on the fighting right, as it were, we have an effort to see him only in terms of passing on gossip or information, which he did, but only in those terms. And I would just like to point out that this effort to essentially erase or eliminate or acid rinse the influence agent from espionage is exceedingly dangerous, but it is also goes against all the record. I'm not just saying it. I can quote any number of experts and also players to the effect of the importance of influence as a Soviet goal.
This is a topic to which we're going to return momentarily. Dinah West is with us for this full hour. We'll be right back with more right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.